Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Lamed Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's Shiur almost halfway down the page. You'll notice two dots where we have a Dibor Maslo Rabbi Nechemya Oimer, Kedei Shalach Odom Michetishka Chamo Chatzimio. This is a quote from the Brisa back on Daf Lamed Dalet Omid Beis, where we were dealing with what is the Zman of Bein Hashmoshos. So Rabbi Nechemya's opinion, it is the amount of time for a person to walk from the time, or the distance a person could walk from the time the sun sets for a half a meal. Half a meal, chatzi meal, is about half a kilometer. Before we get into the Gemara, we have a topic heading on the side, under which we've written under our nosei, which is the topic, Shi'uro Shel Rabbi Nechemya Lebein Hashmoshos. We'll discuss his time allotment for Bein Hashmoshos. And a second point, Be'era Shel Miriam, the miraculous well that traveled in the desert with the Jews after their departure from Mitzrayim, that was their basic water supply. And it moved miraculously in the merit of Miriam. So, the Gemara, Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Kedei Shehalech Odom Mishetishka Chamo Chatzi Mil. That is the amount of time he assigns to Bein Hashmoshes. Omer Rabbi Chanina, Haroitza Leida Shi'uro Shel Rabbi Nechemya. If a person wants to know how long is that amount of time, so Yoniach Chamo Barosh HaKarmel. Carmel is the name of a mountain or mountain range. So he would have the sun positioned above the mountain. V'yered v'yitbol, he would then descend into the sea, v'yale, and arise, descend into the sea and immerse in the sea, v'yale, v'zehu shi'uro shel Rebbe Nechemya. That is the amount of time that would be the length of the Bein Hashmoshes period. The Rashi says, Carmel, Har She'al Sfas Hayam, it's a mountain that is by the shore. V'chamo Somuch L'Shkiyasa, the sun near its setting, near Eis Al Roshei HaHorim, appears to be at the top of these mountains. V'chdei She'yered V'yitbol V'yale, and the amount of time to go down and immerse oneself and then come out, Have Laila, that would already then be night. The Gemara continues, Omer Rabbi Chiya, Haroitza Lirois Be'ero Shel Miriam. If a person wants to see where the well of Miriam is, Yale L'Rosha Carmel, he should go to the top of this mountain, V'yitzpeh, and look down, V'yira Kemin Kvora Bayam, he'll notice what appears to be like a sieve in the sea, V'zuhi Be'ero Shel Miriam. Rashi says, "Kemin sela, kemin kevora is sela a goyel vasoy kevora, a type of rock that is has a meshwork to it like a sieve. That is the bear shell Miriam." Omar, the Gemara continues. Omar Rav, ma'ayon hametaltel, a moving spring tohor, is something that is not mekabel tuma, and one can use it for immersion. V'zehu be'ero shel Miriam. And the only example of a moving, portable or moving spring is the spring of Miriam. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. Bein Hashmoshos de Rav Yehuda Koyanim Toivlin Boi. With this, we open up a new sugya on the side of the Gemara. There are no say heading under the topic heading. We've written, Hezber Meimra Shel Shmuel. The Gemara will be focusing on explaining this comment of Shmuel, to Kohenim Toivlin Bevein Hashmoshes Rabbi Yehuda, that Kohenim are entitled to immerse themselves in the Bein Hashmoshes of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, that comment in and of itself is very difficult to understand. First of all, Kohanim that we're talking about are Kohanim that were Tomei and need to purify themselves in order to be reinstated for eating Truma. Truma, the tithe that Kohanim receive, must be eaten only when they are the Kohanim who receive the Truma tithe are themselves Tohar. So if a Kohen was Tomei, he has to immerse in a mikveh before sundown, and then sundown arrives. Sundown meaning shkia, or the end of the day. And only after that is he eligible for eating the truma. To suggest something like we just saw in the Gemara, that a kohen can immerse himself during Bein HaShemoshes, it's too late for as far as that day is concerned for immersion, for Tevila, because Bein HaShemoshes represents a time period after the day, and we just mentioned that Tevila must take place while it still is daytime. So the Gemara asks, this statement of Shmuel that during the Bein HaShemoshes of Rabbi Yehuda, Kohanim can immerse themselves, can do their Tevila, Leman, according to whom is this? E Lemo, the Rabbi Yehuda, if it's according to the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, both Sveikahu, Bein HaShemoshes is a time of uncertainty, whether it's still day or it's already considered nighttime. And if it's considered nighttime, so it's too late for immersion. Ela, Bein HaShemoshes, the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yossi, Kohenim Toivlin Boi. The time period that Rabbi Yehuda defines as Bein HaShemoshes, according to Rabbi Yossi, that time is still day. So, if you hold by Shitas Rabbi Yossi, and you're a Kohen and immersing yourself during the Bein HaShemoshes as defined by Rabbi Yehuda, so you're in good shape, because according to Rabbi Yossi, that time period, the Bein HaShemoshes of Rabbi Yehuda, is still daytime. The Gemara says, Pshita, well, that's obvious. The Rabbi Yossi gives a later time for Bein HaShemoshes. So the Gemara answers, Mahu detema, without Shmuel's teaching, I would have thought that Bein HaShemoshes to Rabbi Yossi, Meshech Shayech b'di Rabbi Yehuda, that the Bein HaShemoshes of Rabbi Yossi is contained within the time frame of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda's time frame for Bein HaShemoshes. And if it were subsumed in the time frame of Rabbi Yehuda, so they wouldn't be able to be toivel. Komash molon de sholim Bein HaShemoshes Rabbi Yehuda, the hodar maschil Bein HaShemoshes to Rabbi Yossi. What Shmuel is informing us is that first the time period as Rabbi Yehuda defines Bein HaShemoshes completes, it finishes, and only after that does Bein HaShemoshes as defined by Rabbi Yossi begin. Therefore, as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, the time of Bein HaShemoshes as defined by Rabbi Yehuda is for Rabbi Yossi still daytime. So it would be okay for a Kohen who holds like Rabbi Yossi to be Toivel at that point, because he is still within the daytime, which is the time for Tevila. As we go on in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, introducing this section. Hesber hapsak shel Rabbi Yochanan beinyan Bein HaShemoshes. We're going to explain Rabbi Yochanan's psak regarding Bein HaShemoshes, who ruled the halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda le'inyan Shabbos and k'Rabbi Yossi le'inyan Truma. So we're going to try to understand what Rabbi Yochanan means. So the Gemara, Omar Rabo Barachana Om Rabbi Yochanan. Point Aleph, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda le'inyan Shabbos. And we're talking, of course, regarding Bein HaShemoshes. V'aloch Rabbi Yossi le'inyan truma. Bishlamo halochik Rabbi Yehuda le'inyan Shabbos equals l'chumra. I understand that Rabbi Yochanan's psak to follow Rabbi Yehuda's definition of Beina Shmoshes regarding Shabbos, that has a that manifests itself in a stringency. More precisely, regarding Erev Shabbos. In other words, if you say that that we accept Rabbi Yehuda's opinion regarding regarding Beina Shmoshes as it applies to Shabbos and focus on Friday, you're basically saying that when Beina Shmoshes of Rabbi Yehuda arrives, then you have to stop doing malachos, and as we saw in the Mishnah, different things that are forbidden and a couple of things that are still allowed, but it's basically saying that Shabbos has set in. So that represents a stringency, that we're restricting you from doing melachos, from doing Melechus Shabbos already at that time. In contrast, of course, to Rabbi Yossi, who would have said that Beina Shmoshes arrives only later, and that during that same time period you would still be able to do Melachos. But no, Rabbi Yochanan says, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, le'inyan Shabbos, and it means specifically Erev Shabbos. We apply Rabbi Yehuda's approach to Beina Shmoshes, which results in a stringency. Aval le'inyan truma mai hi. What is Rabbi Yochanan's intent when he says that the halacha will follow Rabbi Yossi regarding truma? Ilema litvila, if it means that you could be toivel during the Beina Shmoshes of Rabbi Yehuda, because according to Rabbi Yossi, it's still daytime. Yeah, but Sveikahu, it's doubtful, meaning obviously Rabbi Yochanan is not sure of how to paskin regarding Bein Hashmoshes, by virtue of the fact that he said with regard to Shabbos we go like this one and regarding Trum we go like that one. And if he's not sure, so he is he's going to be strict. If you're unsure of something like this, and we're dealing with halachas that are d'oraisa, so we go l'chumra. So to suggest that the halacha l'gabi truma follows Rabbi Yossi, and to say that that means that you could still be toivel during Rabbi Yehuda's definition of Beina Shmoshes, that would be a leniency. And we know that Rabbi Yochanan is Mesupok, and as a result of his being Besofek, he has to go L'chumra. Ella, we're at the top of Omid Beis. L'achilas Truma Delo Achli Kohanim Truma Ad Sholim Beina Shmoshes de Rabbi Yossi. As we said a little bit earlier, that Kohanim who were Tomei are Toivel by day, and they have to wait then after their Tevilah for the end of the day, and only when night sets in will they be allowed to eat Truma. So what is the definition of the setting in of night? So the Gemara just said, you'll have to wait till the time of Beina Shmoshes as defined by Rabbi Yossi passes, and only then have you entered the night. And that's making the Kohanim wait longer. And hence, we are consistent in our striving for stringency. The Gemara, as it continues, presents a new sukya. And on the side, under our Nosei heading, we've written, Mispar Kohavim me'echod ad shloisha, uma kol mispar misamein. We'll deal with the appearance of stars at night, and what each stars, when we speak about stars, we're going to speak about from one to three stars that appear in the heavens, and what the numbers represent as far as halacha is concerned. The Gemara, Omar of Yudom or Shmuel, Koichav Echad Yom. If you see in the sky one star, as far as halacha is concerned, it's still daytime. Shnayim is Bein HaShemoshes, and Shloisha Laila. Tanyo Nami Hochi, Koichav Echad Yom, Shnayim Bein HaShemoshes, Shloisha Laila. And this brisa supports what Shmuel just taught. Omar Rabbi Yossi Bar Oven, Loi Kechavim Gedoilim Hanirim Beyoyim. When we speak about the stars that represent the different points in time, respectively, we're not talking about large stars that are visible even during the day. Veloi Kechavim Ketanim She'ein Nirim, and not minuscular stars that are barely visible either. Elo. Let's read that again. V'loy kechovim ketanim she'ein nirim elo balayla. Nor are we talking about stars that are so small that you need total darkness in order to see them. Elo beinonim. Rather, we're talking about medium-sized stars. Amr b'yosi bar zvida ha'oysa melocha b'shnei bein hashmoshes chayav chatos mi monavshach. If, as Shabbos approaches, a person does melacha, he does one of the melechas Shabbos during the Bein HaShemoshes between Friday and Shabbos, and he does melacha during the Bein HaShemoshes from Shabbos into Sunday, he will have to bring a sin offering, which is a sacrifice brought when one definitely did an Avera, and this is in contrast with an Osham Tolui, which is a Korban, it's a sacrifice that comes when there is an element of doubt. So being that this person did a Melecha Shabbos, let's say he was engaged in sowing during these two Bein HaShemoshes, one at the entrance of Shabbos and one at the exit. So, whichever Mimon of Shach means, whichever way you look at things, he definitely did a Shabbos violation. Because if the first Bein HaShemoshes represents daytime, so good, he was sowing during Friday. While the second Bein HaShemoshes also would have to, you have to be consistent, that also represents daytime. And that would mean that you were sowing at the end of Shabbos. It was still Shabbos. And if you say that Bein HaShemoshes represents nighttime, so the sowing activity that you did during the first Bein HaShemoshes is a sowing that you were doing during Shabbos itself. And as a result, so from either standpoint, you are definitely guilty of having done a Shabbos violation, and that results in a Korban Chatos, which is a sin offering, as opposed to an Oshem Tolui that would have been brought if there was an element of doubt. Omale Rava Lishame. Rava says to his servant, Atun delo kim luchu bishuro de Rabbonan, you who are not sure about the shur of the Rabbonan regarding the, in other words, the time as the Rabbonan define Bein HaShemoshes. So I'll give you another way of knowing when it's Bein HaShemoshes. Adeshimsha Aresh Dikli Atlu Shruga. When the sun is over the treetops, then light the candles. Beyoim Hamunon Mai. What about during a cloudy day? So, Bemaso Chazi Tarnagola. During a if you're in a city, so notice the chickens. The chickens in town will start going start fluttering up to the rafters while it's still daytime. In other words, they flutter up to the koros, to the rafters, to the beams while it's still day. So that would be the time that you would know it's still before Bein HaShemoshes. So what Rava is instructing his servant is that if you don't know, if you're not familiar of the time of Bein HaShemoshes, and you need to know when to light candles, namely to light candles before Bein HaShemoshes, so I'm giving you these ways of figuring things out. So on a cloudy day, notice the chickens. They go up on the rafters while it's still day. And Bedabro, if you're out in the fields and it's cloudy, Orvi, notice what the Orev birds, another type of bird, they do the same thing. They scamper onto their perches or onto the branches of trees at that time when it's still day. Inami Adoni. Otherwise, you can notice this is the name of a plant, the Doni plant, that is photosensitive. And in the morning, so it bends eastward. And at midday it's erect, and toward the late afternoon, it bends over to the west, so that when it's very bent over, you know that it's when it starts that Rashi says l'erev kfufim oy lamarov, so you'll notice when the plant is bending westwards, that's the time to light candles. Before we go on in the Gemara, we have a new topic at hand, and we, under our Nosei heading, we've written Sheish Tekios Erev Shabbos Ulema Kol Echod Miuad. We'll speak about the shofar blowings that was a practice in many communities in the time of the Gemara to announce the oncoming of Shabbos. And the source that we open up with will mention six shofar blasts, and those six are really a combination of tkia, which is a single solid blast, a trua, which is a more staccato type blast that most of you are probably familiar from Rosh Hashanah, and an alternating tkia, trua, tkia is what was blown. So the Gemara says Tana Rabbanan Sheish Tkios Toiken Erev Shabbos. Rishona, there was, we say, six blasts were blown Erev Shabbos. Rishona Lahavti Lasom Mimlocha Shebasados. The first shofar blast would be heard by people out in fields, and at that time they would stop their field melochas, and that would give them enough time to get into town from the fields before Shabbos. Shnia, second sounding of the shofar, lahavtiu ir v'chanuyos, that would signify the people in town to stop their activities. And shlishis lahadlik esener, that the third shofar blast, that would be a sign to light the Shabbos candles. Divrei Rabbi Nosson, that's Rabbi Nosson's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda Anosi Omer shlishis lachloitz tefillin, at the third shofar blast, that was a sign to remove one's tefillin. People who were wearing tefillin all day would take them off at that point. And Rashi adds, most importantly, that the fourth shofar blowing was for candle lighting. So the source mentioned the third shofar blowing, and the shoya, then the one in charge of the shofar would pause. Kedei tzlias dad cotton, o kedei lahadbik pas betanur, enough time to roast a small fish, or enough time to slap dough onto the sides of an oven. V'tokea umria v'tokea v'shoves, and then there would be another series of three shofar blasts: the tkia, trua, and tkia, and shoves, and that would be the beginning of Shabbos. Omar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Ma nase lohem labavlayim. Now, here there's a bracketed section that means here we should skip this momentarily and just read the Gemara after the brackets. Having said, what can we do with the bavlayim? Shetoiken v'choizun v'toiken umarien v'shoifsin mitoch marien. Notice with our dashed underlining, compare this with the previous dot underline, where the Tanakama mentioned, or Rabbi Yehuda Anosi mentioned, that after the tkia, the last tkia, the sixth sound, the tkia, they would then that would usher in the Shabbos. The Bavlayim would usher in the Shabbos with a Merian, which is with a trua sound. So what are we to say about them? They're not following the tradition. The Gemara says they're okay. Minug avoseim biyodeim. That's the tradition of their forefathers. They're continuing in an age-old tradition, so leave them be. Now we skipped a bracketed section. Let's now learn that. We'll start with Amar Rav Shmuel Gamliel. Manasam lebavlayim shetoikin umerian v'shovsin mitoch merian. That they blow a fourth and fifth sound, that's the tkia and then a trua, and then they usher in Shabbos with that, with the trua. The Gemara asks, Toikin umerian havlu chamisha. If that's all they did, then there were only five shofar blasts, and we know there's supposed to be six. Ela, here is the question. Shetoikin, the Bavlayim shetoikin, the Chozrin v'toikin umerian. Instead of doing at the last three in a tkia, trua, tkia fashion, they did tkia, tkia, and then a trua, and with that, Shabbos was ushered in. V'shoivsin mitoch merian. So what should we do about them? They answer, there's nothing to do with them because minhag avoseim biyodeim. They're following their age-old tradition. Masni le Rav Yehuda l'Rav Yitzchok Brei. Shnia lahadlik esaner. Rav Yehuda taught his son Rav Yitzchok a Tanaic source, and in teaching it, he said that the second shofar blast is for lighting candles. Kiman, who does that follow? Lo k'Rabbi Nosson v'lo k'Rav Yehuda Nosi. Doesn't conform to Rabbi Nosson, who said in the third at the third shofar blast, and nor according to Rabbi Yehuda Nosi that we saw courtesy of Rashi that would be the fourth shofar blast for lighting candles. Ella, rather, a restatement, Shlishis lahadlik is an heir. This is what Rabbi Yehuda taught his son, and namely at the third shofar blast light the candles, and you will ask then, come on, who does that go like? Answer, Karebi Nosson. That follows Rabbi Nosson, who said at the third shofar blast is for lighting candles. And to make it a little easier to find where things are, so we've included a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and this corresponds to an arrow further up the page where Rabbi Nosson's name appeared, and on that line, the third shofar blast was for lighting candles. So this is the more accurate version of what Rabbi Yehuda must have taught his son. Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. We have a Tanaic source. It's somewhat long, goes till the first of the wide lines at the bottom, and it also speaks about the six shofar blasts. And in this source, you'll notice we have triangles around the word Hischil, and under our Mivneh heading on the side, we featured the triangle and noted Ma Koro B'chol Echod Me'atkios. According to the Tanya B'Shmuel, what took place at each one of the shofar blasts will feature three triangles, so you can see that we're dealing with we're highlighting the first three, and let us now continue with the source itself. Sheish Tkiyos Toiken Erev Shabbos. Hischil, there were six shofar blasts blown on late Friday. Hischil l'skoya tkiyah rishona nimnu ha'imdim basoda miladur milachrosh milasos kol melocha shebasodos. This parallels what we saw before, that the first shofar blast was to signify the time for the field workers to cease their field work. So the milador is to till the soil, and lachrosh to plow, and to do any of the other melochas in the fields. The source continues and says, "V'ena kroivin rashoim likones." The people that are not in the fields, rather closer to town, or in the people that are the fields that are bordering on the town, the field workers there are not allowed to go into town, ad shivo rechukim, until the people further away come, the konsu kulam kechad, and they will all walk into town together. So that all the field workers are stopping their field work at the same time, but as far as their re-entrance to town, that they must do together. V'adayin chanuyos psuchos u'treisin munochem. At this point, the stores are still open, and the treisin are the, we'll call them the stands for displaying of their wares are still open. When the stores close, so the treisin would be converted from tables into window shutters. They would be placed in the windows of the stores with which they closed their windows. Hischu l'toyot ki yishniya, they now started blowing the second shofar blast. Nistalku hatresim, so those tables that were displaying the wares of the different vendors, they were removed. And v'ninalu hachanuyos, and the stores were locked up. V'adayin hamin munochen al gabi kiro, v'kderus munochos al gabi kiro. But at this point, after the second shofar blowing, so the food is still... the food and pots are still on the kira, on the stoves. Hischil tot kiyashlishis, at the third shofar blow, silek hamasalek vihitmin hamatmin. Pots that were going to be removed, that they'll use for their contents for food at night, that is removed. And vihitmin hamatmin, the pots that they want to keep warm till the next day, so they would do hatmona, the insulation of the pots, at the third shofar blowing. Vehidlik hamadlik, and the candles were lit. This would seem to be like Rabbi Nosson's opinion that we saw above. Veshoya kidei tzliyas da'ag koton, o kidei lahadbik pas betanur. Then they would pause enough time to roast a little fish or to slap dough on the inside of the oven walls. V'tokea umriya v'tokea v'shoves. And as we saw before, the last set of three shofar blasts would be blown, and they would then that would usher in the Shabbos. Om Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina Shomati she'im bo lahadlik achar sheish tkios madlik. I heard that if someone wanted to light Shabbos candles after the six shofar blowings, he could still light. In other words, it's not yet Shabbos. Sheharei nosnu chachomim shir lachazon hakneses lahoylich shofaroi lebeso. We know that after the sixth blowing, in other words, the shofar was now finished, its use was finished, the chachomim entitled the one in charge, the chazon hakneses, he's the gentleman in charge of the shofar blowing, to bring the shofar back to his house, so that it's, if he's carrying it to his house, so it's obviously not yet Shabbos. Because if it were Shabbos, one wouldn't be allowed to carry it to their house. Being that that's the case, you could still light your Shabbos candles. The Gemara asks, Omar lo. They ask, in Cain, if that's the standard, namely enough time for the fellow blowing the shofar to bring it from where he was blowing the shofar to his house, well, nosato devoracha l'shiurin. You've created a halacha that becomes very subjective. Shiurin literally means different quantities. Well, for some people, they live near where the blowing was taking place, and some people live far away. So what kind of halach is that, which becomes very subjective, whereby you say they gave enough time, they allotted enough time for the chazan hakneses to bring the shofar back to his house. Some people live across the street, and some people live 5 miles away. Ela, rather, mokom sanua, yeshlo lechazan hakneses barosh gago, Sheshom Miniach Shofro. The Chazan HaKnesses each one had a spot on the roof of the place that they blew the shofar, which is not necessarily where they live, but the place that each town had designated for blowing the shofar. And he had a place on the roof to put the shofar, to hide the shofar away. And while that is taking place, it's still not yet Shabbos. Lefi shein metatlin lo yasa shofar velo es hachatzotzros. One is not allowed to move around these things. Rashi adds, even in a Rishus HaYochid, even in a private domain, because of the problem, because of their being under the problem of Muktzah. At this point, we have to take note of some of the structural phenomena that we are going to encounter. You notice, as far as before we deal with the structure itself, they just to review the last point, is that if a person had not lit their Shabbos candles till after the sixth shofar blow, he could still light the candles, even though they just finished the sixth shofar blast, because there's a short amount of time where the Chazan HaKnesses is still moving around the shofar to put it in to put it away for safekeeping. Because if it were so that Shabbos starts immediately at the sixth blast, so the Chazan HaKnesses wouldn't be able to move around the shofar because of its being prohibited under the rules of Muktzah. You may notice to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text numbers with diamonds around them. Here we see 1, 2, and a number 3 appears at the top of Lamed Vov Omed Aleph. And on the side of the Gemara there are Nosei Mivneh heading. The Nosei, this is the topic heading, and Mivneh, the structural note. We indicate that 1 through 3 are three brisos, Shediros Soisrois, Beinyin Tiltu HaShofar B'Shabbos. Three Tanaic sources will appear, the first of which we've already read, that seem to be contradictory regarding carrying or moving around of a shofar on Shabbos. So the first source mentioned that you're not metatel the shofar. Shofar is a shofar, as we're familiar, or sometimes known as a ram's horn, nor a chatzotzros. There's a chatzotzros, another musical instrument, maybe we'll call it it's a type of horn or bugle that is straight. It's basically it's conical or cylindrical in shape. It's not bent. It's a straight instrument. The shofar, on the other hand, is a curved instrument. The being that it's curved, Rashi points out, and this information is important for the Gemara as it goes on, it could be used for purposes other than sound production. Sound production is forbidden on Shabbos, but that same vessel could be used for drawing water, for example, because of its hollow but curved nature. Water could sit in the shofar point of curvature. That being said, we have the first source that says no movement of shofar nor of chatzotzros. The Gemara asks, "Well, Tanya, shofar metaltin v'chatzotzros any metaltin?" Well, there's another source that says the shofar can be moved around, is allowed to be moved on Shabbos, whereas the chatzotzros are not allowed. Omer of Yosef lo kashya kan biyachid kan betzibur. So, if Yosef attempts to give a resolution of these two sources, one is where you're dealing with a private individual that is metaltin; he can move that around. And Kambat Sibur, that's the source that said, that would be the first source that says, Ein Metatlin Los HaShofar, and the shofar that was featured in that source was part of the Sibur requirements of blowing for the community. Amarle Abaye. Abaye raises a question. This question goes till the second line from the third line from the top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, so we've used a long question marking that appears on the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. So Abaye asks, Ubi Yochid Lamai Chazi. He asks rhetorically, the individual, the privately owned shofar, what is it fit for? That you say you can move it on Shabbos, that indicates it has a permitted use. Well, what's that? Hoyul V'roi L'gamea Bo Mayim Latino. You can use it for giving a child water to drink. As we mentioned earlier through the Rashi, the shofar being a curved instrument,
you could fill it with water, and it'll sit in the curvature, and then use it as a type of makeshift cup for a child to drink from. At the top of Lamed Vov Amud Aleph, we continue, but Sibur Nami, a public shofar, also Chozi Legamea Latinok Oni, a child who's impoverished, responsibility of taking care of the impoverished is a communal responsibility. So a child who is impoverished, the community, and in this case the communal shofar, could be used in the service of this type of child as well. So why if you're saying that the basis of allowing the shofar is because it's roi legamebo mayim latinok, and that's how you explained the second source, which said shofar metaltel. So the first source is now without explanation, because you wouldn't say ein metaltelin. So that is one. That's a question that we have to leave by the side for a moment. Vesu hadesanya. And what about this source? This is a third Tanaic source that says kishem shemetaltelin es shofar kach metaltelin es achatzotzros. Just like you're allowed to move the shofar around, you're allowed to move the chatzotzros. Money, who is the author of this source, and this source presents a third take on things, namely no distinction between the two instruments, but in the direction of leniency. Elo lo kashya. Rather, there is no difficulty, there's no contradiction. We have three Tanaic sources, and each one represents a different Tanaic opinion. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, ha Rabbi Shimon, ha Rabbi Nehemia. Rabbi Yehuda represents source number two, which made a distinction between the shofar and the chatzotzros. The chatzotzros is muktzeh. It's something that has no real Shabbos use. Therefore, it can't be moved. A shofar, on the other hand, has a Shabbos type use, and therefore it can be moved around, certainly in the context of using it as a vessel for drinking. The third source, Ha Rabbi Shimon, that's according to Rabbi Shimon, that simply does not accept or subscribe to the concept of muktzeh. If you don't hold from the concept of muktzeh, a vessel, whether it's useful for Shabbos or not, it can be moved around. Hence, the third source that says you can metaltel the chatzotzros as well conforms to Rabbi Shimon, who does not hold from the muktzah idea, the muktzah restriction. And Ha Rabbi Nehemia is the source number one that says you're not allowed to metaltel not only the chatzotzros but also the shofar. That is according to Rabbi Nehemia. Umay shofar nami, and what does the shofar in source number one really refer to? Chatzotzros. Let's go over some of the points we just mentioned. Looking at Rashi on the fourth line from the top, Hodikatoni af shofar imetaplin Rabbi Nehemia domar. This is in accordance with Rabbi Nehemia that holds afilu tarvid afilu talis ein nitlin elo letzorach tashmisho hamyuchad. Even vessels that people take for granted are allowed in movement on Shabbos. For example, a spoon or an article of clothing, a talis. You're not allowed to move those things around on Shabbos other than for their designed purpose. So if you have a spoon on the table, you can't move it around just to, certainly not to bang with it on the table or to use it for some whatever other purpose other than eating. It's a kli, it's a vessel, it's a utensil designed for eating. And an article of clothing is designed for wearing. So only in that context you're allowed to move things around. Now a shofar is not designed as a cup for giving water to a child to drink. It's an instrument for producing a sound. So that's why you see a source that restricts the movement of the shofar. That's in accordance with Rabbi Nehemia. Rashi continues, Umay shofar dekotoni behahi, the Rebbe Nechemya, and what does the word shofar in that source that we assigned just now, namely source number one that we assigned to Rebbe Nechemya, the Actimus Ba Lechatzotzros, the Isura, that you mentioned, that it mentions Chatzotzros before that's source number one had said the fishem metaflin los a shofar v'los a chatzotzros. So in that source we mentioned the shofar before the chatzotzros for an iser as being restricted. The kevan detani ein metaflin es a shofar. Once you would teach that you can't move around a shofar, tsu lo tzorich lemisni chatzotzros, you wouldn't really need to teach the prohibition of moving chatzotzros. The kol shekein he, it would be obvious. Hoyol v'eino roi l'gamei botinok, it has no Shabbos purpose. It's worse than a shofar. So why in the source does it teach that you're not allowed to move a shofar, nor are you allowed to move chatzotzros? The presence of chatzotzros would seem to be redundant. Ella shofar detona reisha. The word shofar that appears first in that source, in source number one, in fact, hu chatzotzros. It's kind of like a reversal, and Gemara will speak about that, that the word shofar that appears there is really the chatzotzros. It's the less useful instrument. The chatzotzros, the tona b'seifa, hu shofar. And the word chatzotzros that appears afterwards in that source is really the familiar shofar. What happened here? Dishtanu Shemayu Kidurachista. Because there was a certain period of time where the names of different items became switched around. So that's what the Gemara is dealing with here on the fifth line from the top when it says, Umay Shofar Nami. What is the shofar in the source number one that we ascribe to Rebbe Nechemya that's taught first? It would have to be chatzotzros. The word shofar really is a reference to chatzotzros, and in that same source, the word chatzotzros is really the shofar, hence justifying the order of things taught, where it says, where that source is saying you can't move chatzotzros, and which is very obvious, and it goes on to say you can't move even shofros, but it presents it in the way it did because the names got switched around. That means switched around historically, as you'll see in a moment. Kidur Rav Chisda, the Omer Rav Chisda, in accordance with Rav Chisda's teaching, Hani Tlas Mili, the following three things that will appear in the Gemara, and you can see we have double underlines and a numbering system. Hani Tlas Mili, Ishtani Shmayu Mechi Chorav Beis Hamikdash. The following three items, names got switched around at the time of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. The first one is most relevant to us, Chatzotzroso Shofar, that which used to be called a Chatzotzeres is now called a Shofar. And Shofar Chatzotzros, Chatzotzroso, and that which used to be called a Shofar is nowadays called a Chatzotzeres. Lamai Nafgamina, for what practical purpose do we have to know this? Answer, L'Shofar Shal Rosh Hashanah. If you want to fulfill your mitzvah of shofar blowing on Rosh Hashanah, so you would have to ask for, at least as far as at the time of the Gemara, at the time this Gemara was speaking, you would have to ask for a chatzotzeres. Because as the Gemara is saying, a chatzotzeres nowadays is what originally was the shofar. And you are, the only way to fulfill your Rosh Hashanah mitzvah is by blowing a ram's horn, a shofar. But nowadays, it's called a chatzotzeres. The Gemara goes on with two more examples. Arava tzapzifa, what used to be called an arava, is after the Churban Abayis is called a tzapzifa, and tzapzifa arava. And the tzapzifa plant is, what used to be called a tzapzifa plant is now called arava. Lamai nafgamina, what practical difference does this mean for us? Nafgamina lelulav. I should say, Lamai Nafgamina, answer Lululav, to know what you need or what to ask for when you set up your Lulav. A Lulav needs an Arava, but nowadays, that plant, which is officially the Arava, you'll have to request a Tzavtzifa, because The Tzafsefa nowadays represents the real, the authentic Arava. And finally, Psora Psorta, and Psorta Psora. These are words that refer to tables. There's a large table and a small table. So a Psora was a large one, and in the before the destruction of the temple, the large one was called a Psora, and the small one was called a Psorta. Nowadays, the terms got switched around, and a Psorta, that which used to be the small one, is nowadays called by the term Psora. Lamai nafgamina, what practical difference does this have? Lamekach umemkar, this has a nafgamina regarding business matters when it comes to orders and purchases and amounts you pay for things, so that if you are paying a lot of money, you would nowadays have best ordered that which is called nowadays a psorta. True, years ago that was the small one, but nowadays the psorta is the large one. Being that we're in the context of a daf yomi shir, we've already spilled over more than half a daf onto daf lamed vav, but we are in the middle of a discussion, so this would be a somewhat reasonable place to pause, even though we really are still in the middle of a discussion. So with this, we conclude our shiur for today.